Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. Ahn, clinical sexologist, with Xander Kegg, licensed social worker. Xander will introduce our guest.
Thank you, Dr. Ahn. That's very nice. I am really looking forward to today's show. We are going to be talking about grief. So just a little heads up for you who are listening, talking about death and grief today. Our guest today is Tracy Barrett. Tracy is a Midwest native who relocated to Florida to be closer to their family in 2010. Since making the move to Florida, following in the footsteps of their parents, Tracy sat on the board of PFLAG, which led to several volunteer opportunities within the LGBTQIA community. Tracy received their Bachelor of Science from Purdue University and Master's of Business Administration from Franklin University. Tracy is currently navigating the grief process after losing their mother, dog, and younger brother all within 6 months in 2023. Well, first off, let me say welcome to the Umbrella Hour. And then secondly, to say to you, Tracy, that is a lot of loss in a short period of time. So thank you for coming on to talk to us about it.
Thank you so much.
I mentioned to you that my father died recently. It was just last month on the 27th of February. And so I've been going through my own grief process. And I was thinking it might be interesting for us to talk about maybe some of the ways that we are managing, or not, the grief and the loss. What are some of the resources that you have found helpful? How are you doing? What are some of the ways that you're dealing with the grief right now?
Yeah, sure. My current employer has an EAP, which is Employee Assistance Program, that allows you to have grief counseling, and you get, I think, 3 sessions for free. And so that was helpful, at least getting started talking to somebody about it. I didn't really want to talk to anybody, but I knew for me to move on, I really needed to talk about it. And I talked with my spouse and my friends, but it was something I needed to do. And so that's been helpful. And then I did learn that hospice has free counseling. I have not used that yet, but both my parents were in hospice at one point. My dad passed away back in 2011. So that was quite a while ago, but hospice was very kind in providing information when we needed it. And so that has helped. I kept busy when my mom first passed away, trying to just get her house together. And I had my little board with all my to-do lists and things that we needed to get processed, and helping my brother as well navigate. My brother's partner's mom was in hospice at the same time our mom was in hospice. It was almost like a family reunion being in there, because they got to see each other, which was really nice because our moms were best friends and they passed away 2 days apart. It was beneficial for our families because we could be there for each other, but just trying to navigate after that, going busy, you're going through boxes, busy, busy, busy. And then when you're not busy, you're sitting there thinking, oh gosh, now my brain is starting to think about things and I don't like that. So I try to keep busy. I usually read every night, but I couldn't read. Couldn't read after my mom passed. And then I just started reading again. And then when my brother passed away, it just started all over again. And so I just started reading again, really the other night. I've gotten through about 178 pages, so that's good because I enjoy reading. Yeah, that's helped me. Just reading, working out. I was not really doing anything, just sitting around, and I needed to get my body moving again. So I think working out helps a lot, and just being around people instead of sitting there sulking, I think helps.
You talk about not reading, and so I'm wondering, was that because you were having difficulty focusing and concentrating? Because I know I went through about 3 weeks of being, I call it discombobulated. I couldn't concentrate or focus, and I was incorrectly putting meetings on my calendar, like wrong day, wrong time. And so I was having trouble organizing my schedule. Was that the reason why you weren't reading, or were there other reasons?
I think, yeah, the reading, when I'm laying in bed, I'm just thinking too much and I can't focus. I could work fine. Work actually kept my mind off of thinking about things, and I was fine working. You know, I work with numbers, so that wasn't an issue. It's just when I sat down to leisurely read and take my mind off things, that's when my mind started going and I just kept reading the same sentence over and over, and it just wasn't working. So yeah, I think when you're just trying to not think about things, that's when you start thinking about them, and the reading just wasn't coming together. So
yeah, that makes sense. You talk about the grief counseling through the EAP program through your work, and that the hospice program does provide bereavement services. My father was in hospice, and so I was contacted within a couple of days after he passed, and I was informed that I had 13 months of free bereavement services, and there were a whole list of things that that included: one-on-one counseling, group counseling, different workshops that they offered, activities they offered. And one of the things on the list was a men's support group. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll go to that. It meets at like a restaurant, I think a Denny's, twice a month. I've been to one meeting so far. I was drawn to it because I used to attend a men's caregiver group. And these were men who were primarily married to women who had Alzheimer's, dementia, other cognitive issues, because I had realized early on going to caregiver groups that were largely run by women and attended by women, they didn't really know how to relate to me. And we were having very different experiences as caregivers. And so when I went to this men's caregiver support group, it was a very wonderful, welcoming place, 20, 30, 40 men at a time, once a month in this room meeting together. The men's support group for bereavement, the grief one, is smaller. It is led by a chaplain from the hospice team. And I had met him because he had visited my father. It's a nice connection in that way to see him. Spanish is his first language, and so was my father's. So they spoke to each other a little bit. My dad could speak more. I just want people to know that taking advantage of these different services that are provided, whether it's through EAP or therapist or something out in the community or through the hospice program, these bereavement services, it can be useful. And the men in this grief group, all of them, their wives have been dead for 3, 4, 5 years. One in 7 years. And they're still coming. Every once in a while, somebody like me pops up. And they want to be able to be there, which is nice because I would have been there by myself otherwise, right, if they weren't there. Now, the hospice program told you that there were bereavement services. Is there a time frame like mine? Mine's 13 months. Is it similar for you?
I think it was similar. I don't remember the 13 months, but they did send a letter stating that there were free services available, and it was in individual settings or group settings, and to just call this number. And I just haven't done that yet, but I probably will take advantage of that since the EAP sessions have ended, but I have still been seeing my therapist. I just would like to look at other avenues to see what's out there since hospice did such a good job.
I wanted to see if you were comfortable in bringing you back to the first time you learned that Joe had passed away. I think it's important for purposes of recognizing how far you've come. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So we were on vacation in North Carolina. And before we left, I told my brother, I said, well, you know, I always called mom and told her when we arrived somewhere. So I said, you're my point person. So I'm going to call you when we get there. And so I called him and I'm like, hey, we're here. And he's like, okay, great. And he told us what was going on because he was in Savannah with his partner. And he's like, yeah, I think Pride's going on and we didn't know about it, but we're going to enjoy Pride here. And then it was a couple nights later and my brother's partner called 11 o'clock at night, and he doesn't call at 11 o'clock at night. And he said, something's happened and Joe's in the hospital. And I could tell he was visibly upset and I knew something wasn't right. And for some reason, I knew it wasn't going to have a good outcome. And then I got the call at 5 a.m. that my brother didn't make it. And I just didn't believe it. How can this be? We just went through this with mom and we had just had birthday dinner for my brother on the 9th of October. And this happened on the 22nd of October. And I remember when I was giving my brother a hug after we met for dinner, he just hugged me so tight and I felt like he gave me an extra hug. And that was the last time I actually physically hugged my brother. So that was really difficult. And then we headed down to Savannah, obviously that morning, to be with my brother's partner. And it was just awful. You know, I still feel those feelings, just awful. Because he was my younger brother, so that was even more. Even now, I feel like I have survivor's guilt. I'm like, why him and not me? Because I'm supposed to be taking care of him because he's my younger brother. That was very difficult and still is very, very difficult. I'll see something like, oh, I need to call Joe and tell him about this. Sometimes you forget in the moment when you get excited about something. And you're like, hey, I'm going to give him a call or text him. And then you remember how horrible reality is, and my whole family's gone. I'm the last of my immediate family, so it's very, very hard.
I've been referring to myself as an orphan now because both of my parents are gone, and my mother passed in 2000, so it's been quite a while, but her death was sudden and unexpected. For me, there's been a big difference between my mother and my father because of the difference between my father slowly dying over the course of 5 years versus my mother. I talked to her. 2 days later, I got a call. She's in a coma in a hospital. It was very much like that. I had this opportunity to hear my mother's voice anytime I wanted to for one whole year after she died, because she had paid in advance for a year's worth of answering service. If you remember back in the old days of the answering services. And so I could call that number and hear my mom's voice any time of day or night, right? It was just a recording. And sometimes I would call it and I would do that thing. Hey, mom, guess what I did today? Like, I would just do it. I would leave a message. And once that was gone, and I still do it today, I'll get a thought or I'll see something and I might say it out loud or I might think it in my head. And I'll be like, hey, mom, check that out, right? I still do it because I had that kind of relationship with my mother. Although my mother didn't raise me, she was more likely the one I would call and say, hey, this is good news. More so than my dad, even though he raised me and we were much closer. It was something about I wanted to have a connection with my mother that I didn't have growing up. And so now I'm thinking too quick, it's too soon for my dad, because I just spent this whole last weekend having thoughts pop up. Oh, the nursing home's not going to call. There's no reason for them to call anymore. For a moment, I hope everything's okay with my dad. And then I was like, oh, wait, no. So I'm still too early in reminiscing with him, but I feel like I'm just going to do that with him too. Why not? But it's such a different thing. I was never a caregiver for my mother, right? And I was for my dad. So it's been very different. It sounds like perhaps it was different for you then with your brother, because that was sudden and your mother was in hospice. And I'm not sure about where she was before that, but it sounds like it was a longer phase for your mother.
Yes, I was her caregiver for the most part. And when she was actually living in a condo and we got her out of the condo because it had stairs and moved her to a house that was very close to where we live, she moved in with us for a couple months, but she was so independent. I want my own house. I don't want to be burdened. I'm like, you're not a burden, but we still were enjoying seeing each other and having lunch, and we'd have our family dinners and we'd still take her out to eat if she was able. But we even had some nursing come in to help a little bit. But she was still pretty independent. Then she was going in and out of the hospital, and it started becoming very frequent when you're dealing with cardiac and cancer issues at the same time. And then those doctors are also competing and saying different things. And you feel like the referee are like, wait, no, you can't, not a doctor, but I know when the cardiologist saying, oh, they need fluid, but the cancer doctors, no, they don't need fluid. And so that was also a learning experience. And also when Dr. On was mentioning just the hospice process, I saw that process in both my parents. I remember my dad having that moment where he was able to speak very clearly when before he wasn't, and asked for his glasses and a newspaper and wanted to watch TV. And my mom kind of doing the same thing. You know, she was actually crocheting when she first got into hospice, but then it went downhill pretty quickly. But then she was really unable to communicate probably the last few days. But then I got a phone call, and it was from her asking where I was. How did she do that? Because they do have these moments where they of clarity, where they come back, and it's strange, but the whole process was very clear. And even in my dog, the terminal restlessness, I saw that in her, and just, you know, pacing night after night, not being able to lay down. You know, I saw that with my mom because we had cameras in her house when she was still living at home. But you really see the patterns, and I learned so much. And when I was younger, I was definitely not the caregiving type. I didn't like being close to people really, but I felt so different after taking care of my mom. I'm in healthcare now, but in a financial sense, but I'm actually going to get my first aid renewed and my everything, because some things just make you do things that you start thinking are important. And
I've worked in hospitals as a medical social worker. Primarily, I've worked in Department of Veterans Affairs hospitals and Department of Defense hospitals. And one of the things that I noticed, especially at the VA, is people who were in administrative jobs were still able to become volunteers responding to emergencies. They could be trained in how to be part of those teams, and along with the doctors and the nurses and other individuals. And some of them were even able to go on teams away. If there was an emergency that FEMA was at, they could, which I believe, let's see, in the United States, that's the Federal Emergency Management Agency, maybe, or administration, one of the two. And so they respond to when there's natural disasters of the big scale. And so they would go off on a team, because you need all kinds of skills when you go over there, including numbers, I bet. But it's having those disaster response skills. And I think even the Red Cross, you can go through their trainings and get all the way up to disaster response level in those trainings. It can be very rewarding for people to be able to give back in that way on a volunteer basis, with even within their community, within their workplace. Have you thought about doing something like that, going along that route?
Yeah, I just definitely feel like after going through this, that I just want to help other people. And I feel the sense that I need to do that. And it's just like a calling or something. And so I'm definitely going to look into that.
When we experience a loss, oftentimes what happens is that our limbic system, which is the, I always refer to it as the dinosaur brain, essentially it's that primordial brain that kicks in. It's that fight or flight response. And so how it affects us when we lose someone is exactly in the same way, takes on the same pattern. We will experience an increase in our heart rate, our breathing, our temperature even might go up and down, because the flood of hormones are released. It's cortisol, and that's our stress hormone. That is the hormone that aids us in times when we have to run from tigers. And what are we running from when we experience grief? And so it's an interesting perspective, because we don't want to see or hear what we're hearing or seeing. It's upsetting. So the influx of cortisol floods our system, and then we have very similar reactions, and that can come and go. And experiencing grief and having those moments where it feels like it was just yesterday is part of what we do. It's part of our work, work in grief. What we don't want people to do is to find themselves in the same place a year from now. Then we know they're stuck. They're not able to find resilience in being able to navigate their world outside of experiencing what we see. We see Some individuals, if it's shocking, they experience PTSD in a similar way that if somebody were in a car accident or were perhaps experiencing a break-in in their home. But we want them to navigate into a different realm, and that's restoring all that work that they've done to help them get on the other side of that. And it will travel back and forth for a while. Birthdays will be reminders, any holiday season, aromas, certain foods, going places, that's all part of it. We are going to take our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg, and our guest this hour is Tracy Barrett. We are talking about grief and loss. Stay tuned, we'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. This is Dr. On with Xander Keg, and our guest this hour is Tracy Barrett. Tracy is a Midwest native and relocated to Florida to be near their family in 2010. Since making the move to Florida, had followed in the footsteps of their parents, Tracy also sat on the board of PFLAG, leading to several volunteer opportunities within the LGBTQIA+ community. We are discussing grief and loss. Let's get back to where we left off.
When somebody is asking me recently, why 13 months of bereavement? They thought that was a little strange, and I said, well, because it gets you all the way through a full year and just beyond. So you're going to be going through, like you said, holidays, anniversaries, you're going to be driving by places, you're going to be visiting places and people that remind you. And so you're going to be going all the way through their birthday. So all of these things are going to be happening. And then you're going to get around 12 months later, and you're going to be at the anniversary of their death. And then it's for a month following that. So it's support to get you through the natural curve of the year of what happens when you're dealing with grief and the loss. Because I think a lot of people don't realize that you're right. What you were saying, Dr. On, is that smells, our olfactory memory is very strong. We could walk by somebody and they're wearing the cologne or perfume that our loved one liked to wear. Or we could be in someone's home and they're using cleaning agents that are the same as what we grew up with. So we're going to get these memories and they're going to come straight through our nose. I think it surprises people how powerful olfactory memories are. So I appreciate that the services are for that whole period of time, because it's going to allow me to travel with this men's grief group over the course of the next, at this point, 12 months now. I really appreciate that they see the importance of being with the family or the family member for that period of time.
In grief work, the beauty of it is your brain reroutes and it finds those pathways. So I think we have to be kind to ourselves, because it's cultural too. I have to say that it's cultural. So in the US, it's not so much maybe now as previously, but all right, you lost someone. You have 3 days check in with HR, let us know you're here, and we'll welcome you back. Well, that's not realistic. And the reality is most people can't recover in 3 days. The 13-month time frame is way more realistic than this 3-day rule of you better get back to work. I don't know what they did for you, Tracy. Did they do that for you?
My company was very understanding. I've been with the company since I was with them when my father died, and I'm still with the same company when my mom and my brother died, but we do get 3 days, but I get a lot of PTO, and my boss was always like, just take whatever time you need. And so they were very generous, but I just wanted to work. I didn't want to think about anything. I just wanted to work and take the days off I needed when I knew I needed to do things. That's just how I've always operated. I feel like when my father died, I was always trying to be the strong one for my family. And I feel like now I'm being the strong one for myself. I don't know. I just was still trying to plow through things. But work did help me just not think about things when I didn't want to think about them. But then eventually you do have to think. And I guess when all of this happened last year, then immediately the holidays came. Nothing had really hit me yet. So I was just going through the motions with the holidays. I still wanted to have them because we tend to have a lot of friends over. And so just wanted to be there for my friends and them there for me and just to take my mind off things. And then once the holidays were over, I think that's when things started to hit me more with everything.
Xander, I was going to ask if it helped you to stay busy.
Well, I didn't stay busy. I actually took the last 4 weeks off of work because I was having difficulty keeping track of things and I didn't want to lose track at work. I didn't want to make errors. So I just decided, I'm my own boss. So I just decided to take the time off. I don't report to anybody else. As a wellness presenter or facilitator, I'm constantly teaching people how to take care of themselves and how to devise their own self-care plans, how to help self-compassion. I thought, well, I need to start using these tools and strategies for myself. And so that's what I've been doing, just my own advice. And of course, it doesn't come from me. It's all of this collective wisdom about how to regulate emotions and how to tolerate distress. But my sleep was completely dysregulated. And as a person who teaches about the importance of sleep, I got to experience firsthand in my life, the first time in my life, having my sleep completely dysregulated. And for those of you who have trouble with sleep, sleep dysregulation dysregulates every other system in your body. So your immune system, your system for tracking your hunger, your blood sugar level system, all the systems that are regulating all the different areas of your body, the hormone production and weight management, all of this gets dysregulated when your sleep is dysregulated, your circadian rhythm. So I went through that firsthand for about 3 weeks. Maybe it's still slightly there, but not so much. I am starting to sleep all the way through the night now, but I did not for about 3 weeks, almost 4 weeks. It was tough. Well, I guess it's one of the things you said on about well-meaning advice. And I remember it was after my mother died. Well, it was a few years. It was maybe like 2004, 2005, something around there. I was working in this small office, and one of the people I was working with, one of the women, her mother died, and she was gone for about 2 or 3 weeks. And when she came back to the office, I said to her, how's it been? How are you? She had had these upsetting experiences where well-meaning people were giving her well-meaning advice and offering suggestions and solutions to her, and she hated it. She hated hearing, oh, your mother's in a better place. You need to just cry it out, or she hated all that stuff. And I remember saying to her, or asking her at the time, what would you rather have said to you? And so she told me, and so I've been using that ever since. And so I will ask you, Tracy, were you and your mother close? And what are some of the most heartwarming memories you have of your time together?
Yes, my family, we were all very close. I was very close to my dad, and then close to my mom. And I kept trying to get her to teach me how to crochet, but she crocheted right-handed and I crocheted left-handed. Every time I was with her, I just made the most out of it because I knew once she got sick that our time was going to be not forever. And so I tried to make every moment just very memorable. We'd go sit out on the porch and watch the birds, get the binoculars out. So even in her sickness, I tried to make sure she enjoyed herself and tried to stay upbeat. because some people can get down when they're sick, but if you can, you don't have to always say super positive things, but that's just the way I am. But try to say it in a way that eases them and give her little massages on her neck or something. And then when she passed, I don't know, I just wanted a massage and I don't want to think about anything. When you're talking about the sleeping, yes, my sleep is still off. It's better, and I've learned how to manage some things with that and just learn how to navigate sleep, but it's definitely not back to normal yet.
Yeah, sleep is interesting, and it does relate to that limbic system, right? The dinosaur, the lizard brain, right? Because when we're in that fight or flight mode, there's too much surging through us, right? Our brain is too active for us to calm down. And so often people will try meditation, but if you're having trouble concentrating and focusing, meditation is going to be difficult. It's not easy to get back to good sleep. It sounds like if you say you haven't been back, it means you had some good sleep. Like getting back to that is not easy. It doesn't just happen, right? We have to sort of find our way back. When I had this conversation with this coworker years ago, she was saying some of the things she wished people would have asked her is things like, were you close? Were you able to be with her before she passed? Did you get to spend any time? Nobody asked her those kinds of questions. And she thought it was probably because people didn't want to bring up memories that would be too difficult. But it was what she was really, really wanting, was to just tell people about her mother. And so I'm wondering, were there some well-intended, well-meaning people? We don't have to name names, but did you encounter people who were doing their darndest, you know, to try and be well-meaning? What were some of the things that maybe people did or said that you did not find helpful? And then some of the things that you did find helpful? I think it's good for people to hear that they're in a better place might not work for some people.
I think I was lucky in that most of my immediate friends or close friends have dealt with the death. So they kind of knew what I was going through and knew not to say a whole lot, just say, I'm there if you need anything. I'm really sorry. I don't remember getting a lot of negative feedback of, not negative, but well-meaning, which might be odd, but I don't remember that. I just remember people reaching out saying, I wish I would have reached out, but I waited, things like that. But it was actually nice when they said, hey, I just remember your mom being such a kind person, and they would remember some memory and say something really nice, or about my brother. And so that was really nice. And actually, one of my brother's friends from growing up, he's actually writing a biography about my brother. So he keeps sending me chapters. And it's so cool because I don't remember some of this stuff. And to get to read these memories, it's really a neat thing. Yeah, some of the things I appreciated were just people mentioning my mom or my brother and what they remembered about them. And that meant a lot. Yeah.
I think one of the most thoughtful things that I received, it was probably 2 or 3 days after my dad died, I got a package in the mail. It was a frame, and wooden frame that had this really nice engraved wording on it that said something about memories and you'll always be in my heart. And then it had a place where I could put a photograph. And so I have this wonderful photo of my father and I just 2 years ago on Father's Day that was taken at his nursing home when he was still up and moving. And so I put that in there. I actually have that picture up right in front of me right now. And I put it around the house. That's only because I was there when my father died. And so the image in my brain is not the one I want to remember. And so I have these healthier looking, smiling faces. And so I was able to take that picture and shrink it down. I printed it on printer, the paper that you get a photograph on. I was able, literally, on my phone, I was able to send off a picture from my phone to a CVS, which is a drugstore that has a photo thing in it. And I was able to go pick up a photograph that was like 20-something cents. This day and age, the things we could do. And then I put it right in the frame, and now it's up in my bedroom. And I thought that was so thoughtful. And this is somebody who I was actually in relationship with almost 25 years ago. So this is somebody who knew my father and loved my father, and my father loved her, and it was just nice. And that's why I notified her, my father. So I kept her updated throughout the whole thing, but it was very kind and very thoughtful. I wouldn't have thought of doing something like that, but now I know, like, I'll do something like that next time with somebody.
And speaking of the photograph, when my mom was in hospice. It was right before Mother's Day. I think it was the day before Mother's Day. And my mom was still talking, and my brother and I were there, and we're like, hey, let's take a picture. You know, my mom's hair had fallen out, but it started growing back, and it was really cute. It was a real short crop and just cute how it came back. And I'm like, let's take a picture. And my brother's like, well, why don't we wait till tomorrow when it's Mother's Day? And for some reason, I said, let's take one now. And the next day, my mom had taken a turn and wouldn't have been able to take that picture. So I'm so glad that we were able to take that. And she was smiling. And I was with my mother when she passed. And I kind of knew when it was going to happen. I spent the night every night at hospice. I'd go to work during the day, and then my brother would be there during the day, and I'd come at night. But it was a very peaceful death. I know some people don't get to experience that, but I'm glad I was with her just because I wanted to make sure that she wasn't alone when she passed. But it was very peaceful, and I'm glad that I was with her.
We are taking our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. Ahn and Xander Keg. Our guest this hour is Tracy Barrett. We've been talking about grief and loss. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. Ahn and Xander Keg. Our guest this hour is Tracy Barrett. We are discussing grief and loss. Let's pick up where we left off.
I just want to tell people, don't wait to take that picture. Don't wait. Just take it, because you never know day by day what could happen. And I'm so glad that we took the picture the day before Mother's Day, because now we have that picture. And I have that picture of both of them, because now they're both gone.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Good thing. I'm glad you said, no, let's do it today. We get that. We get those messages. And too often we don't pay attention to them. We don't. So I'm glad you paid attention to that. I was with my father also, like I said, and I had been away for the weekend, and I had just come back, and they called me on Monday morning to let me know that my father had gone to bed Saturday evening and hadn't gotten out of bed, hadn't eaten, and hadn't had any fluids. He hadn't opened his eyes. And I was, oh, okay, I'm on my way, you know, and stayed with him for most of that day. And I came back the next morning, and he still hadn't opened his eyes. He hadn't had any food. They said no food or fluids because they didn't know if he'd swallow or not. So hospice basically said, don't do that. And at one point, I stood up, because I was sitting in a chair next to him. I stood up and I said, Dad, I'm here. It's okay. You can go now. He took his last breath and he was gone. That was like the movies. It was just done. It was like a swallow and then he was gone. My first thought was, if I had known that would work, I would have done it yesterday, so he wouldn't have been gasping for breath for 24 hours. It was very peaceful because, it just was. My father didn't have the lucidity that you mentioned. He didn't have that. I'm thinking he heard my voice and I had been there, but I wasn't talking to him. I was just quietly sitting there. And every once in a while, I would read something to him, but I thought, I'll just be quiet. My father was a very quiet man. I'll just be quiet. I'll sit here. I kept remembering these stories that people would say, oh, they wait until all the kids are there, or they wait until this one person shows up and then they go. And I thought, well, maybe I'll just let him know I'm here.
So I've seen both. I've seen it where they wait for everybody to leave. I put something in the chat. It's called Good Grief, A Companion for Every Loss by Granger Westberg. He wrote this years ago, but it still applies today. I wanted to say, Tracy, I never met Xander's father, but I certainly met your mother a number of times, and my first recollection, I shared this with you, was when I was working on a photo project. It was an educational piece. Your mother was there. I believe your parents were there.
Yeah, I believe you've met my father.
He was tall. He was a tall man. Now, they knew it was perplexing for me at the time because everybody came to get their photos taken. And she looked at me. And she said, because I told her I wanted to take her photo. And she looked at me and she had that voice. Why? I'll never forget that. I love that. I absolutely love that. But I loved so much about her.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
That resonates with you, Tracy, as the description of your mom.
Yeah, my mom would corner people in the elevator and at her work and say, "Is there something you want to tell me? You okay?" She was just trying to be a mother to everyone, and she didn't hold back what she was thinking, and it was a good quality most of the time.
Absolutely. A lot of people talk about. I've heard people that I know that have worked in hospice that what they hear people talking about is more often the wonderful people they knew, the wonderful places they went. There's not a lot of regrets that are talked about at the end, but I think sometimes we think, oh, I don't want to get to the end of my life and have all these regrets. But as far as I can tell from people I've heard from, there's not a lot of regret talk. My father didn't do a lot of regret talk. I don't think he did any regret talk. My father lived a very, very full, active, robust life and was loved by many people. So I never heard him talk about regrets. Do you feel this is the same for your mom? No regrets at the end?
Yeah, I think my brother had this sense that he was going to go before his partner for some reason. It wasn't suicide. He didn't commit suicide. He had a heart attack, but he had this extra sense, I think, that not a lot of people have, that he was going to go early. And he was right. So it's a little crazy, but yeah, I don't think they regretted anything. I think they lived happy lives. My brother, right before he went, they were having a fabulous night. He was in his happy place in Savannah, and they had a picture taken right before he passed, and he looked super happy. So,
Well, Tracy, it's been an absolute joy, which is a strange thing to say when we're talking about grief, but it has been a joy to have you on the show to share with us about your mom and your brother and your father and just the process of grief that you're going through and how it's impacting you. And, we always like to say to our guests, we'd love to have you back on because it'd be wonderful to be able to catch up with you and see how you're doing 6 months, 9 months, a year to test out that 13-month concept.
yeah, I would love that. Yeah, I appreciate this platform to just talk about grief because I think it is very therapeutic just to talk about it. And if it can help even one person, I think it's worth it.
Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
We have come to the end of the Umbrella Hour. You've been listening to Dr. On, clinical sexologist, and Xander Keg, licensed social worker. Our guest this hour was Tracy Barrett, and we discussed grief and loss. And we hope to have Tracy return 6 months from now to let us know how they are doing. Thank you for listening to the Umbrella Hour.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.